call the Senate Tax Committee to order. Thank you, members, for on such short notice making yourself available to be here today. I've got a couple of housekeeping things. Michelle Allen, who was counsel to the Tax Committee, is a proud parent. She had a baby last Saturday, and her new son's name is Zachary William. So she's going to be on maternity leave this session, and taking her place this year is going to be Mark Hasty. Mark, stand up. So those of you that work with the Tax Committee are going to see Mark in the room joining Ms. Zoff. Mark is originally from Scotland, moved to the United States about 13 years ago, has done quite extensive work as a law clerk, did some work for the Nonpartisan House Research, graduate of St. Thomas Law School, and all his contact information will be the same as Michelle Allen's. Members, we've included in your packet here today, in your save folder, a copy of the tax expenditure report that the Department of Revenue does. You all remember these are the things that are specifically exempted from taxation in Minnesota. We're going to spend a considerable amount of time, probably towards late January, going through this, bring the department in, and we're going to take a look at all of the things in this book that are exempt from taxation and see if they still make sense. Because, you know, they've been put in over decades and decades of time, and it's I think it's a good idea, considering these fiscal conditions, that we review the things in there that the legislature over time has made exempt. Could be that some of those things in there were made exempt at times when the state had a pretty healthy budget situation, and maybe were put in more because we had the money than we needed the policy. So we're going to spend some time on that. So that's in your save folder. I'm not going to ask you to look at it over the holidays, but if you want to get a little star, you'll come with some suggestions and some comments on some of those things as we move through January. Also in your packets is a revised spreadsheet, and that has a column for the end of session, last time we met when we left here, and then those revenues and the aids and credits have been updated based on the November forecast. So it's where we were in May and as it compares to where we are today. So you might want to save that also, give us a little idea of where we're at. Dr. Stinson? Members, I asked Dr. Stinson, our state economist, to come in and talk to the Tax Committee a little bit about the state of the economy, the recession that we all have read now that we're in, and kind of what the what his observations are about when we might come out of something like this and the challenges. And members, if you have any questions, Dr. Stinson is always a pleasure to have him in the Tax Committee. Dr. Stinson, thank you for taking time, and I know your time is short, so we'll get right to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the interest of time, I'm going to try and save a little bit of the gloom and doom that I could give you, and assume that the members already know the basic outline of what we reported on last Thursday, which is that we are facing a $426 million budget shortfall for the current deficit for the current biennium, and then an additional $4.8 billion in deficit or in shortfall for the next biennium. That was that forecast was based on Global Insights national macroeconomic forecast that was put out at the 1st of November. In that forecast, they had a 1% decline in real GDP in their forecast for 2009. This forecast is almost all prospective. The decline in revenues that we're forecasting really hasn't occurred yet, although it's starting to occur November, in the most recent numbers for November. The Minnesota Management and Budget's rule is that we have a 3-day rule that after the forecast is released, we don't accept anybody coming up and saying, "Oh, but have you seen this, or have you heard this, or are things worse, or anything like that." However, the events on Friday were sufficient that we have now had to reassess our position. If you go to the handout, the first 3 pages are what the forecast was that the revenue forecast was based on that we released on Thursday. At the bottom of page 4, we note that the recession could be worse than forecast in November. And we show you the Global Insight optimistic scenario, probability 15%, pessimistic scenario, probability 25%, and baseline scenario, which is the scenario we used, probability 60%. If you turn to the top of page 5, this is a graph that is an attempt to show you the major change that went on that we found out about on Friday. On Friday, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics announced that the number of jobs, payroll employment in the U.S. in the month of November fell by more than 500,000. They also announced that they were revising downward their estimates of employment in September and October and taking another roughly 220,000 jobs out of the mix. What that means is that when we did the forecast, we knew that through October, the U.S. economy had lost 1.1 million jobs. Now we know that through November, the U.S. economy has lost more than 1.9 million jobs. This is an enormous change in the forecast. On the bottom of page 5, Global Insights December forecast as opposed to November forecast. You can see that in November, they were expecting a decline of 1% in the U.S. economy in 2009. Now they're expecting a decline of at least 1.8%. On the top of page 6, this is just one example of what's gone on. The graph shows the February forecast for consumer spending on non-auto durables. The heavy dark line is the November forecast for U.S. spending on consumer non-auto durables, a major part of our sales tax base, furniture, electronics, things like that. The dotted line shows the further deterioration. What it says is that the drop is going to be sooner. We're not going to go much below where we were before, but because we will fall sooner and not recover any faster, we will lose sales taxes. Obviously, we're going to lose income tax receipts by lower employment and lower growth in wages. Corporate profits tax will be likely lower as well. One of the unusual things is that if you look closely at the graph at the bottom of page 4, or page 6, which shows the alternative scenarios, the December baseline scenario now in the short term is worse than the November pessimistic scenario. What's equally disturbing is that the December pessimistic scenario is now assigned a probability of 40%. That coupled with a 55% probability for the baseline scenario means that Global Insights view something better than their baseline scenario only has a 1 chance in 20 of occurring. There's some offsetting not so bad news. I won't say it's good news, but we have looked at the change in Global Insights forecast, and a lot of it is of magnitudes that we had already at least partially anticipated. We had expected in Minnesota, in our economic model for Minnesota, wages not to grow near as fast as Global Insight has them in their November baseline forecast. We now see that Global Insight has come back more toward our estimate. Now, we might revise our estimate down some, but it's not going to be down as much proportionally as Global Insights brought their estimate down. Some of this was just already anticipated, and so while this is a very serious change, the outlook for the remainder of the 2009 biennium, while it will be noticeable, is not going to be, we do not think, on the order of $100 million or more. It's more likely to be something less than $100 million, probably more in the 20 to 70 range or something like that. That's still a problem, but it's not as big a problem as this creates looking out into 2010 and 2011. The other piece of not as bad news is that there's still a lot of information to come before we do the February forecast. You remember I talked about the importance of the capital gains forecast for the current 2009 revenue forecast. We will get better information on that with fourth quarter estimated payments that we'll know by the end of January. We'll know how well or poorly Christmas sales did compared to our forecast by the end of January, and there's a potential for upside there. We'll have 2 more months of withholding receipts. We'll have fourth quarter GDP, and it may be that things won't turn out to be quite as bad in the fourth quarter as they currently look. In November, Global Insights forecast was for 3.3% decline in real GDP at an annual rate in the fourth quarter. Now their forecast is for 5% decline at an annual rate. All of this news will be factored into the February forecast. We tried to be as realistic as possible in November, and we could see things deteriorating over the month of November. And so some of the news that's incorporated in Global Insights forecast is already built into the forecast. But until we do another forecast, we won't know how much of that news is built in.
Dr. Stinson, last week, if I remember the number correctly, you thought we'd lose 58,000 jobs between now and the end of 2009. Do these revised GDP numbers from Global Insights now in December have any... you have any observations about if that might affect the jobs numbers further beyond the 58,000 you were thinking about last week?
Almost surely, if the Global Insight December forecast is the forecast that we use in February, if it doesn't change between now and February, we will take jobs out. However, at this time, we haven't had time to go back in and redo the forecast. That would be an effort that would take more than a week to do, and at this point it's just not worthwhile to do, given that we'll have additional information later this week, I think it's later this week, about what's happened to Minnesota employment in November. And that information will be out later this month anyway. That would be information that we would want to incorporate into our forecast as well.
You know, members, I've been thinking about Dr. Stinson's comments from last week that we're going to lose an additional 58,000 jobs between now and the end of 2009. And I really became quite alarmed when I started to think of it this way. That is 1,000 jobs lost every week for the entire next year. I mean, think about it. Today there's a story in the paper that Hutchinson is going to cut 1,000 jobs. Can you imagine? We are facing a Hutchinson technology story every single week for the entire next year. I mean, that is quite a challenge that we're facing. Is that an accurate interpretation, Dr. Stinson?
Unfortunately, Mr. Chairman, that's an accurate interpretation.
Any questions, members? Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Stinson, when you were talking about the February forecast, I think you used terms of 30 to 70 million. Was that what you were saying might be worse for this biennium? Did you give a range there? I didn't quite catch the numbers you were saying there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty, we did some crude back-of-the-envelope analysis of the current biennium because the current biennium, of course, is a real constraint and came up with a range of, say, $30 to $70 million or something. Now, this could all change given that we'll have receipts, two more months of receipts. We'll have Christmas sales tax receipts. We'll have withholding tax receipts. We'll have final estimated payments. So this could all change. Assuming that everything stayed as it was, it would be somewhere in that range.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Stinson, as I look at these graphs, you've got us kind of showing some upswings in 2011. Can you talk about what the impetus is that's bringing that about? It's all perspective, but is there anything that the state can do to assist that as it turns around in the future?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, we're outside the bounds of the statistics that we use to calibrate our econometric models in forecasting. We're in a situation, for example, where in 2008 we've had housing starts at less than 1 million units. That's the lowest level of housing starts since World War II. And for 2009, we're now expecting 750,000 units as opposed to less than a million, just less than a million. So we're expecting some pretty big declines there. That'll work through some inventory. Once we work through some inventory, then there will be natural growth that occurs that people do need houses to live in. And with a growing population, you need to provide more housing. And so there are items that will start up. We expect that the federal stimulus package will provide some lift to the economy, although the structure of the federal stimulus package will be very important in terms of how quickly it gets us out of there. And I know, Mr. Chairman, you and the members of the committee have heard me explain before that infrastructure spending at the state level, new infrastructure spending at the state level or at the federal level, doesn't really have very much short-term kick, that most of it comes more than 12 months after it's approved. And so in the short term, a large federal infrastructure program is not going to help get us out of the problems that we have in 2009. It'll start to kick in 2010 and 2011, and that's part of what's going on there. There's been an awful lot of money put into trying to make credit markets more successfully to function better in there. That's assumed to begin to work There is in this forecast an assumption that some money will come directly from the federal government to state governments in the next 6 months or so, both on the Medicaid match side and in block grant form to help states deal with the severe problems that they have financially. All of those things will help. But if you look at that graph that is at the bottom of page 6, I think, you can see that Global Insights, and you remember that Global Insights' pessimistic scenario has a 40% probability. You can see that that scenario extends with a recession well into 2010 and then very slow growth thereafter. And so this is an area where people are very concerned. We hope that 2009 marks the end of the recession and we start turning up, but there are certainly no guarantees. In any event, this recession is going to be the worst since the 1980s, and it's very likely to be as bad as the recession in the 1980s.
Dr. Stinson, is it unusual for Global Insight to assign such a high percentage to their pessimistic scenario? It's 40% seems really high.
Mr. Chairman, in my 20-plus years here, I've never seen a probability that high. I mean, this is really unprecedented.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Dr. Stinson. At the tail end of your comments, you talked about the decline in GDP from the revision of that from 3.3%, and then I didn't quite hear you about how what you really think it is and how that compares to your chart. Your chart on page 5, the bottom of page 5, which talks about the December baseline with a 1.8% decline. Can you comment on that a little bit?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, if you turn to page 1 of the handout, this shows quarterly GDP growth rates, real GDP growth rates. And if you look at the one that's the lowest, that's the negative 3.3% that's forecast for that was forecast for this quarter. Okay. Draw that line down so that it takes up two-thirds of the distance to the 6. That's what we're talking about now for the fourth quarter, minus 5% as opposed to minus 3.3%. There's some debate about what the numbers will turn out to be, with only 2 months of information, we don't know, but some people are saying as much as 8% decline in that, which would take it off the chart. The first quarter of 2009, which is the second one that's there, the 2.2. Let me look it up to be sure here. I think it goes down to 3.4%, but I don't want to mislead you. I'm sorry, it goes down to 3.8%, minus 3.8%.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and Dr. Stinson, just one follow-up. Your comments about GDP, especially your chart on page 6 about consumer spending. When you talked about that chart, you talked about non-auto durables. Do those revised figures then factor in the loss of automobile sales and the revenue from automobile sales? Is that part of what's driving this? It's not factored in at all?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, this is a part of the Minnesota sales tax base. The motor vehicle sales tax is estimated separately. And so this is the part that would show up in the general sales tax base. This is the part that we get 100 cents on every dollar collected, not like the motor vehicle sales tax where much of it goes to transit and transportation funds.
Thank you.
Senator Limmer. And then, members, we need to let Dr. Stinson go. He has another commitment.
Dr. Stinson, on that last graph of the 40% probability that the financial success will drop to a pessimistic scenario, is it kind of like, is this graph representative of kind of looking at the glass half empty or half full? If we looked at it conversely, what would be the probability? Would it be a 60% probability that we would achieve baseline or the optimistic view of the projection?
Okay, that's one way of looking at it. I'm going to get my economist card pulled by for having an optimistic view here, but that's one way of looking at it, there's a 60% chance that we'll do as well or better than the baseline, and a 95% chance we'll do as well or more poorly than the baseline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Stinson, I know that when we look on, like, the lower graph on page 4, the recession could be worse. That's where you see the optimistic or pessimistic range of the recession. But the recession is based, I believe, on some measurable form of economic output or projection of that. Have they looked into, at least when they project, do they consider which way the government is going to react? Are we going to react with more government programs, higher taxes to keep government programs afloat, or are they going to look at perhaps government tightening its belt, cutting its expenses, and getting through the recession without putting any more burden on the taxpayer? How does that optimistic, pessimistic range, how is that defined in light of those two extremes?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, with respect to the federal government, there is a stimulus package assumed in there. There is no tax increase assumed to finance that, so this will be deficit financed. With respect to state and local governments, because state governments, as you well know, have constitutional limitations on their ability to borrow for spending, for operating spending, there are cuts expected in state and local government spending.
Mr. Chair and Dr. Stinson, I know you have to leave, but this will be my last question. The federal stimulus packages that I've heard about are rather large dollar amounts, dollar figures, and they're all deficit spending, as you had mentioned. When the government kicks that much money into an economy, now we could be triggering an inflationary cost as well, because now we're putting too many dollars chasing too few goods, and that could trigger an inflationary outcome. And has that been tabulated in all of these projections as well?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, yes, that is taken into account. However, the economy is currently so weak that the problem of chasing, of government competing away goods from others and driving up the prices, that's not seen to be a problem. It seemed to be a problem out in 2011, and we expect to see higher interest rates in 2011 after the economy once stabilizes in order to protect against inflation. But in the short term, inflation is not seen to be a problem.
Senator Pogamiller, then we're going to let Dr. Stinson go.
Mr. Stinson, very quick question. I just wanted to clarify. Are you saying there's a potential for the 421 to go up 30 to 70?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay. That's what I thought you said.
Dr. Stinson, thank you for making yourself available to the committee. Senator Pogamiller, maybe you could share with the committee, all of us as committee members and probably the public, we have to trust what we read in the newspaper relative to the discussions for what the governor's considering and what legislative leaders might be considering and discussions between them. But Senator Pogamiller, If you would, could you share with us, to the extent that you can, conversations that you've had with the governor relative to, let's talk about the short-term problem we have, the 426. I think that's what we're trying to get our arms around here today. If there's something you can share with the committee relative to your discussions with the governor, I think that might be a helpful place for us to start before we start taking public testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just very briefly, the governor was very gracious, invited the speaker and myself over Friday morning, I think it was now, and we had a good conversation. He indicated that he wanted to collaborate with the legislature. He has the power. I think everybody knows he has the power to unallocate now, but he was very gracious. He said he'd like to work with the legislative leadership because this is a relatively small problem compared to the larger problem next biennium. And I think the general discussion was is that pretty much everything was on the table relative to spending right now that we could get at. And I think the speaker has said publicly that really there's only about $600 to $900 million that we could get at for this biennium to solve this 421 problem. The governor indicated that he felt that we would have to take the $150 million budget reserve, that one-time money. So that gets you down to 271. So the challenge before us right now is 271 million. And the timing is such that he needs to make a decision on an allocation by the last week of December. And he will probably want to make the decision earlier than that because they have to actually cut the checks by the last week of December. And so I think the general discussion was he'd like to get some sense by the end of this week what the possibilities are with legislative input. He's then going to be in Israel for a couple days, which is fine. I don't think that because there's work to be done around this. But then he'll be back next Tuesday, and then I think that's pretty much starting next week then he's going to have to make a decision. And so I think from the legislative perspective, we've got fiscal staff working on what the possibilities are that we could jointly kind of agree to with the governor. And so that's pretty much where it is. And there is work going on behind the scenes, which I'm not at liberty to talk about. There's really no negotiations going on. I think everybody's just waiting to see what are the possibilities, and that's what fiscal staff are working on. But just for illustration, and this is something I've had done, this is not a proposal, this is not what the governor is suggesting, this is not what the House is suggesting, this is not what the Senate's suggesting. But just to kind of give a focus to the situation, I've passed out a sheet that shows if you look at 2009 spending and take a proportional 1.6% from all of those areas, that would reach the 271. And this then lists what those numbers would be in the various areas of spending. This is broken out by our divisions of spending, our committees. And again, this is not a proposal. The governor's not suggesting this. The House isn't. I'm not. This is just to kind of give you a kind of a starting point of how one would think about addressing the 271 million. And so that would be 110 out of K-12, 25 out of higher ed, 79 or 80 out of human services, 1.5 out of veterans, 3.3 out of environment, 2.6 out of economic development, 1.8 out of transportation, 9.2 out of public safety, 6.1 out of judiciary, 5.6 out of state government, and 25 million. Those were all millions there. 25 million out of taxes and credits, which would be this committee's jurisdiction. That gets you to 271. Again, not a proposal, just kind of a rough cut. How would one start to think about this? And I just thought I'd pass that out and allow people to chew on that. And I think everybody understands you can't really do anything on the revenue side for this short-term issue. The revenue discussion is totally, I mean, you just can't raise revenue at the state level to resolve this. So.
Thank you, Senator Pugmiller. Let's get into the testimony from, looks like it's mostly mayors. How about if we have three at a time come up? Let's have a three-person panel. Mayor Hammond-Roland, Mayor Walden, and Mayor Rybeck. I didn't see Mayor Rybeck in the room. Is he here?
Mr. Chair, Mayor Rybeck will be arriving shortly, so we may need to call up perhaps Mayor Bauman.
Mayor Bauman here? Okay. We'll put Mayor Rybeck off to the next panel. Welcome to the Tax Committee, and please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you very much, Senator Chair Bach. My name is Mary Hayman Roland, the mayor of Apple Valley, and the president of the League of Minnesota Cities, which represents 830 cities out of the 854 cities in Minnesota. I want to express my appreciation to you and the committee members for holding this hearing on the state's immediate budget crisis and the dollars due to city governments in just 21 days. Dollars totaling $242 million in local government aid and $38 million in market value homestead credit. Today, I'm joined by mayors and council members and city officials throughout Minnesota, from the Minneapolis, which is the population of over 300,000, to Heartland, population almost 300. Cities represented in this room, I would like you to stand and be recognized.
I assume that's everybody.
We get the picture.
We understand, Chair, Mr. Chair, we understand the gravity of the task before you, you and the committee. Finding a resolution to the immediate $426 million deficit and a $4.8 million deficit to be reconciled for the next biennium. It is imperative that you understand the gravity of the situation we face at the local level and how important it is that the state make good on the dollars promised to cities yet this December. The aid amounts cities are to receive in the next few weeks will determine more than a year that were determined more than a year ago. Back then, when the concern was about an economic downturn and the Dow topped 13,000, we had yet to lose 25,900 jobs and see our neighborhoods transformed by foreclosures. Back then, we even knew who was elected to be our United States senators. Times have certainly changed for our nation, our state, and for our communities and our people. I'd like to take you even further back to 2003 and 2004. State aids to cities in those years were cut by $281.6 million. Cities were left reeling from those cuts for years. They tapped the reserves that prudently were built up. They squeezed out efficiencies in every area of operations. They laid off workers. And just in the last year, cities have finally begun to stabilize their operations. But city employment remains nearly 6% below 2003 level. Cuts to LGA and market value homestead credit at this time, before the end of 2008, would have a much dire consequence, especially when cities are also having to operate under levy limits. In this economy and following these very frugal years, cities simply don't have the flexibility they once had to roll with the punches. They will have no choice but to cut core services. And this is not hyperbole. It is reality. The extent to the cuts we'll see in police, fire, and other essential services, we don't know yet. It was just 6 days ago when we were made of the depth of the problem, the state's financial problems, and the specter of the unallotment. giving cities little time to determine exactly what difference different levels of possible cuts would mean for their residents. In a moment, I would like to turn it over to several of my friends and colleagues from Minnesota cities. They will each share with their own city situations, what they faced over the past several years, and their initial assessments of how their communities would be affected by the cuts in local government aid and market value homestead credit. Before I do that, I'd like to convey to you a message from Jacqueline Buckland, City Clerk from the City of Williams, population 2007. I would love to attend tomorrow, but really it isn't possible or financially feasible to make a trip to the cities for this. Please express the City of Williams' concern over possibly losing our market value homestead credit in LGA. We use all of the second half LGA payment and part of the second half property taxes to make our sewer payment to USDA Rural Development. If we lose our second LGA payment, we will literally not be able to keep the city hall doors open. Please let them know at the Capitol how important these payments are to small cities like ours that rely on these monies to survive. We cannot let the lights go out on City Hall. I urge you to hear the concerns of the City of Williams and all our cities, not to in terms of dollars, but in terms of services that will be affected, the essential services that Minnesotans have the right to assume they can count on in good times and in bad. I very much appreciate you hearing this, and I'd like to turn it over now to my good friend and colleague, Mayor Wayne Walden from the City of Wadena. Mayor?
But before Mr. Mayor Walden starts, members, those of you that don't know where Williams is, Senator Scoy, correct me if I'm wrong. It's on State Highway 11 between International Falls and Baudette.
Yes.
Right? I didn't realize there was 2,000 people there. There must be more than
207.
Oh, okay. I think you said 2,000.
I apologize. I just made them bigger than they were. But in our minds, they're equal to us.
200 sounds more like the population of Williams.
Thank you for catching that,
no,
Chair.
Thank you. Mayor Walden, thank you for coming down today.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for taking the time to meet with cities. I am here today representing the not only the City of Wadena, but I'm the president of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, which represents 81 cities in Greater Minnesota, many that are standing around here, their mayors and representatives here today. Cities are 21 days from the end of their yearly budget. Any cut in December LGA payment will put our 2008 budgets out of balance with no way of increasing revenues or ability to cut spending, since most of our spending for the year has already occurred. As Senator Pogemiller has stated, this 421 is a small problem, but for cities it's a huge problem on top of more LGA cuts that we anticipate seeing in 2009 and 2010. To deal with the reduction, cities will use their reserves and cut spending and hope to replenish their reserves later. To be clear, reserves for most cities are to get them between payment of aids and property taxes. They are more like the state's cash flow account. They make sure we have the money to pay the bills. I believe you have the handout that takes a look at the difference between the state budget cycle and the city budget cycle. As you can see, cities are on a January 1st through December 31st budget cycle, where the state is in a fiscal year July 1st through June 30th. Our cities have certified their levies and budgets a year ago. We started working on those budgets a year and a half ago. As I stated before, we're 21 days at this point from the end of the current budget cycle, making it almost impossible for us to be able to react to a reduction or an unallocation on allotment to our budget. I'll leave that for your reading and your consideration. In Wadena, we've been careful and prudent about our budget. We've already cut our capital, part-time employees, and most overtime, with the exception of law enforcement. We, unlike some cities, have enough reserves and could make payroll for the next 6 months, although our reserves would be greatly depreciated to the point of almost being gone. Other cities are not as good a financial situation. We've received reports from many cities across the state on the impact they believe on elimination or a large cut of the December payment, like we have. I'll read you some abbreviated responses since we all can't be up here and speak to them. I'll start with Wilmer. Our city's financial situation is simply that we have a 2008 balanced budget. To lose any expected revenues with 2 weeks remaining in the budget year and have to rely on reserves is ludicrous. How does one make cuts when 95% of your budget has been expended? Brainerd. Brainerd has $5,329 left in its general fund at the end of November for a $9 million budget. Brainerd needs its second half property tax payments and aid payments to pay the bills. They've tried to negotiate a wage freeze for 2009 with little luck, and have cut almost all capital purchases for 2009 except for police vehicle replacements. Also, a full-time firefighter and street foreman will not be replaced after retirements. Next, they will start layoffs, which will certainly affect services. Wyndham. To withstand a reduction or elimination in 2008 LGA at this late point in the year would be disastrous. Wyndham would not have any reserves if the second half of 2008 LGA money does not come. Laverne. Laverne would cut reserves from 50 to 25% of their general fund. They are planning a freeze on wages and capital spending. Morris. Couldn't comprehend losing the second half payment. Their reserves are there to provide cash flow until these payments come in, not to get them by until our taxes come in May. The city cannot freeze wages because their contracts run through 2010. Its water and sewer system is out and needs replacement. Their 2009 tax levy was reduced 5.5% thanks to the levy limit formula. Without its aid payment, the city is in real trouble. Austin. Reserves would go from 41% to 10%. The city would not have adequate funds for the first 6 months of 2009 and would need to use short-term operating bonds or sell investments at a loss. Austin has cut spending. Over the past 20 years, the city has reduced its workforce by 24%. The percentage reduction will grow, and other major cuts will have to be made if Austin is hit with another major reduction in LGA. Benson, as of today, has no reserves and is already using other funds to cash flow. No aid payment will make a bad situation worse. Roseau would draw down on its reserves, which are still low due to rebuilding after the 2002 floods. Granite Falls, at the end of November, has a deficit of $500,000. Even with its second half payments and its full December LGA, the city will have a small deficit. Any reduction will make their situation worse. New Ulm would have no reserves and approximately $800,000 deficit by May. Park Rapids would have to stop their capital improvement program, forfeiting federal and state funding. They would not be able to live up to their purchase agreement for a new fire truck. Le Sueur has an extremely low classification from the state auditor regarding its reserves. On November 1st, their fund balance was $8,883. Ely. Any reduction in the second LGA payment 2008 will require the city to operate under a certificate of indebtedness. International Falls, and I quote, "It would be insane for the state to cut payments scheduled for 1 week from now. Payments they only just told us this spring would be increased. At the same time they told us LGA would increase, the state limited our authority to raise property taxes. If the state cuts December LGA payments, no one should ever again complain about city reserves." Absent a crystal ball, the city of International Falls will never again be able to rely on state for anything even remotely resembling responsible fiscal policy. More bad news. We've only received this from a few cities, so we don't know how widespread the problem is, but St. James just received their second half property payment from the county to find that 10% of their total taxes were not paid for the year. Park Rapids, tax receipts are down $132,000. As you can see, a disruption in aid payments to cities will have a real impact on cities across greater Minnesota. I'd like to thank the committee for hearing from the cities that I represent, and if there's any questions, I'd certainly be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Mayor Wolden. Mayor Bauman? Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee, for allowing me to speak. I am Beth Bauman, the mayor of the city of South St. Paul, and I agree with my partners up here, but my perspective is a little more narrow. I want to tell you a story about South St. Paul. South St. Paul was devastated by the loss of its main industry, which was meatpacking, in the 60s and 70s, and so became heavily dependent on local government aid because of the loss of 8,000 jobs and the bulk of our commercial tax base. We've managed to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps and recover about half of that and half of those jobs. We are still heavily dependent. In 2003, at that time, we were dependent on $3.4 million in local government aid. We weathered the taking or unallotment of $1.4 million in the past 5 years. And rather than raise taxes, we chose to cut spending and become lean and mean in our city. This has caused other issues. We've also created more opportunities for economic development. But as you know, in this environment, it's getting tougher and tougher because in our city, redevelopment is tougher and tougher. It's not a nice green space. It's a bad brown space that has to be remediated. So as we've continued to try to expand our tax base and try to lower our expenses, we have needed the local government aid we've gotten. A cut of 1.02% this or $1.02 million this year would be to the detriment of our public safety, our streets and roads, and water and sewer, cut into our core services for our community. We would be unable to recover that, and we would have to cut many jobs. So at this time, I'd like to ask you to consider your unallotment and what those numbers might be, because the impact to our city would be devastating. Not as bad as the original devastation in the 60s and 70s with the loss of the industries, but it would harm us in the ability to provide core services to our community. Thank you for hearing from me.
Thank you, Ms. Mullen. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mayor Woldener, maybe Mayor Hammond Rowland, I think you both talked a little bit about the cash flow difficulties and how the cities are using your reserves for your cash flow. And you mentioned that you would be using some short-term indebtedness or bonding. Could you walk me through a little bit more of what you would do with your cash flow problems if this payment isn't going to be paid, what some of the options are? And I'm wondering, because of the credit difficulties, you know, this would all play out if it does come about.
Senator, in Apple Valley, it wouldn't be that way, but I'm going to turn it over to Mayor Woldener so that he can share from the cities, from the greater Minnesota coalition of cities.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Skoy. One of the options cities do have for those who do have enterprise funds is the city of Wadena, for example, has an electric utility. They use we keep a reserve in that to be able to replace transformers if we have a storm come through, ice damage, things like that. We try to keep a couple $1 million in there. One of the things we'd be doing is interfund borrowing. There are many cities who don't have that luxury, and I named some of those cities when I spoke, that do not enjoy a utility or the ability to be able to transfer funds from within. So what they're looking at is aid anticipation notes. The problem with that is they're jeopardizing their credit rating when they have worked hard, scraped, and really suffered to be able to put together a fund balance with the anticipation that this funding would be brought about from the state level. They've relied on that. So they've watched their budgets very carefully. Greater Minnesota has always had levy limits. It's called an election, and every 2 years we experience that. I myself, if we're overspending or if our levy gets out of hand, we're not there.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Skoy,
aid anticipation note. Where do you go to borrow that money?
Well, aid anticipation note is an example that I've used. I know school districts have used that in the past. The city of Wadena had not had to use something like that, but I talked about the possibility of cashing in investments and things like that. Again, those are part of fund balance, whether it be restricted or unrestricted. But there are local options in borrowing, banks, those sorts of things, if there are cash flow issues. But again, some communities don't have that option.
Thank you,
Jim. Senator Pogman.
Mayor of South St. Paul. I apologize. I forgot your name.
Beth Bauman.
Bauman, Mayor Bauman, I apologize. The 1.02 you were talking about is if we took, if the decision was to take the entire December payment.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, I hope that's...
I hope so,
I don't
too.
Think that's what... I hope that's... No one's talking about that.
Senator Pogemiller, if we can't come to an agreement with the governor, that is within his authority.
It is. But I think at this stage, he would like to work with the legislature, and I hope we're able to do that, because we certainly... I mean, it makes no sense to take that level. I mean, it's not rational. It's...
I would hope not.
Well... And I think, Mr. Chairman, it wouldn't be fair. I think what we have to focus on is fairness now in terms of sharing the sacrifice here, and that everybody needs to chip in on a little. So I just wanted, I was trying to find that number, and you were talking about the whole payment.
The whole payment.
Yeah. Well, Senator Pogemiller, kind of to that point, I do think the Tax Committee has to have a discussion that lets... For instance, if your proportionate share sheet became something like it became the vehicle by which we made the cuts, I think it would be a bit unfair for the Tax Committee to say only cities that get aids and credits are going to participate in the Tax Committee's share. It seems to me, you know, we have a lot of cities in the state that don't get local government aid. It would seem to me to ask only the LGA cities to participate in the cuts the Tax Committee has to make wouldn't equitably share the burden across the state, because the whole idea of the LGA is those low tax capacity cities, we try to equalize some tax base with LGA. So I'm pretty reluctant to go down the road of just balancing the Tax Committee's portion of the deficit on aid recipients from the state. I think that would be a bit unfair. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mayor Bauman, I was interested in that number as well. I'd like to know, what is your annual budget and how much of your budget is LGA?
Our general fund budget is $10 million. And a half, so 2.04% of that is LGA.
And so is that 1.02 million,
would be
is that
half
the,
of the
total?
That would be half of the payment this year, so the December payment.
So that's quite a bit more than 2%.
If you,
20%. I'm sorry, 20%. I was having trouble with the math. 20%.
Okay, and then if I could, how many residents are there in the city of South St. Paul?
20,000.
Thank you.
A lot of twos.
There are. It's easy to do that.
Any other questions of these panel members? Members? Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, we have other mayors who wish to also speak. And this time, R.T. Rybeck is not yet here, so I would ask Debbie Gettle and also Kelly Ralph, the mayor. Debbie is the mayor of the city of Richfield, and Kelly, the mayor of the city of Heartland.
Welcome to the Tax Committee. And your name and what community you represent, please.
My name is Kelly Roth. I'm with the City of Heartland.
And I'm Debbie Gotell. I'm with the City of Richfield and the Mayor.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. Thank you, Chair and Senator, to take the time to hear us. It was good to hear from the community of Williams, Minnesota, because we are in the same position as they are. We have approximately 270 people. And half... of our tax revenue is from the LGA, approximately $53,000. Our total is 107. Last year we'd lost from the previous cut was approximately 3,000. And so for us, you know, and we're looking at approximately 9.1% increase for next year. That was equivalent to just over $10,000. And what has happened to us now is that when we've did some projects that we took several years to do, approximately did 900 feet of highway or street where we had some water problems. Our water, our infrastructure is is over 20 years old. Our water system is approximately 60 years old. It was built back in 1964. due to water main breaks and different things that have happened, you know, we've had to rebuild these streets. $60,000+ is what we were able to put together out of our total capital reserve from everything from monies that we've set aside for the fire departments, for our vehicles, our building repairs. That left us with $4,000 left for this year. And that's from, that is, that money is basically is left from our LGA. I mean, that's all we have to run. And to continue with some of our struggle, we had to replace just the heating system in our city hall. It was approximately $7,000. It was more than that with the air conditioning. And we asked the city maintenance to do what you can to get us through the end of the year so that our next payment comes, we can replace this. Well, he came to us at the last meeting and said that he has to put water in it every day. So basically the only time we had heat is when they would fill it and run it. So we did go ahead, and the people that installed it, we only did the boiler system. And that was approximately $7,000. And they let us pay the balance in the following year to finish it. And if we do that with this cuts that they're talking about, it just won't happen. You know, we don't have our clerks and our city maintenance man. They've both gone to part-time jobs. And this has been years back. They're down to 16 to 20 hours a week. And even our city clerk is working from home just because it's just more economical. And we just can't. You know, with our firemen and stuff, they came to us now with concerns that OSHA has outdated all of their fire equipment. And just the, there's 19 members, and it's all volunteer. And pretty much all the money that they raise is from benefits, fundraisers, different things, and what little bit we can add and what the township can add. And then they, you know, to give you an idea of our equipment, we have our city maintenance building is a two-stall garage, and it really is. And the equipment we have is over 20 years old. The newest fire truck that we did, we assessed the taxes to the community to get it, and it was that's the newest is a 2003. The other vehicle is a 64 Chevy. That's our fire assistance, our ambulance service. It's not an ambulance service. It's a first responder crew. These guys are training every month. It's what they do. It's all volunteer. And we don't get to charge for services, you know, when there's calls. Our fire calls are only a few a year. We do a lot of mutual aid to different communities. The first responders, they go to, they're there before the ambulance arrives. When 911 calls, they're there. They have the scene ready. But we're not able to charge for these services because we don't transport. They're not paramedics. They're just people that are there first. And so our revenues, when you only have a couple calls a year for the fire and them, it's nothing. I mean, it's maybe $1,000, you know, and that's not much revenue. You know, of course, you don't look at your services that way as a revenue when you have to go to calls, but these are things that they rely on, and that's including the LGA. I mean, that's what helps keep them alive and the city. So if there's anything else I can add or talk.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And just for all of our benefit in geography, Heartland is between Owatonna and Albert Lea?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, it is.
That's great.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mayor Gotell.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mayor Roth. I represent a lot of small communities like Heartland in northern Minnesota. And one of the things that I think people need to think about, and you did touch on a little bit, is the area that you provide service to that's outside of your city, because you provide fire service to all the surrounding townships. And those the issues that, you know, this is going to affect. More people than just the residents of Heartland. It's going to affect the people that live around that community. One of the things that I've always been pleased with in Minnesota is that we have been able to keep these small towns somewhat vibrant with the equalized LGA payment, and certainly sympathize with your efforts here.
Thank you, Senator, and we do appreciate, when we look at just the people in the community, our average our home income is not even $40,000 a year per family. And, when we look at to adjust for the loss, if we lose the LGA, we're looking at a 55% increase. And these items, we don't have any frills. This is just basic operation, just to pay the bills. That's all we have.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senate Committee members. I really appreciate this opportunity to share the story of the city of Richfield. We are the first suburb of Minnesota. We are a fully developed first-ring suburb. So that puts us in a different position as well as some of the outlying areas who still have green space and opportunities to redevelop. The city of Richfield is a community that relies significantly on state aid, such as the local government aid and the market value homestead credit law. Loss of these aids in December would devastate Richfield. Our December payment schedule is roughly $1.1 million. This money is critical to us. This LGA makes up more than 11% of our general fund budget now. And $300,000 of the homestead credit is another payment that is adding up to $1.4 million. The critical issue is that the money has already been spent. Wages, supplies, and equipment to provide public services and the trust that the state aid revenues would be forthcoming to Richfield before the end of the year. We did a little bit of homework last night, late after the council meeting, talking about what would it mean if we lost this second payment. And we looked at the police department. We have 43 sworn officers at this time, and approximately 16 positions would be lost if this happened. That means we would not have 24/7 coverage in the city of Richfield. But it would also impact our sister cities of Minneapolis, Bloomington, Edina, and the airport, as we have joint powers agreement with all these cities to help each other out and back each other up. We've already done these kinds of agreements in trying to cut our budgets several years ago. We've already laid off employees this year. We've already cut jobs to half-time staff. If any cuts are made in LGA, it will mean jobs in the city of Richfield. There's no opportunity also to plan for this huge potential unexpected reduction. There's absolutely no way to recover the monies that have already been spent for the services. Richfield's case, 80% of our general fund pays for public safety, public works, including street and park. So it's essential services, basic services. Compounding the issue further is that Richfield is faced with a higher than metro average foreclosure in our community and has incurred unanticipated additional city costs for services pertaining to those situations. Richfield does not have adequate reserve fund balance to absorb this type of loss of reduction. Richfield only has approximately 37% fund balance in the general fund. This is at the low end of what the state auditor's office would recommend for Minnesota cities. Even at 37%, Richfield barely has enough operating cash to pay the expenditures for the first 6 months of each year until July, when the city gets its first half of property tax settlement and the first half of the LGA payment. Spending down the city's fund balance below the 37% places the city into critical low cash position, where the city would likely have to borrow money for normal operations for the portion of the year. Worse yet, there is no way to recover the 2009, because in 2009, LGA was certified at $465,000 increase over the certified 2008 LGA. The 2009 certified increase in LGA had the effect of significantly reducing the city's levy limit down to 1.28%. so that affects our levy limits. So in effect, Richfield will be in an even worse position in 2009 with double jeopardy, if not only losing some of our certified state aid, but also being in the position of not having had the ability to levy taxes to make up the difference in those aids. What's on top of having reduced general fund balance would put the city in a very precarious financial position, even after significant staff reductions. So in essence, actions taken with respect to our state aid in the last month of 2008 will have a critical impact on our ability to maintain the stability of our community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Any questions of these panel members? Thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Bach and committee members. I would like to call up now, and I'm going to give my seat to our first vice president. He is the mayor of the city of Rochester, Ardell Brady, and also Tim Schulte, council member from the city of Coon Rapids, and our mayor of the city of Minneapolis, R.T. Rybak. Thank you very much for hearing us today.
Thank you very much, Mayor Hamrolin. Welcome to the committee, Mayor.
You first. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members. And I want to begin by saying how much we appreciate you having this meeting and by how much we appreciate the tone that's come out of the Capitol. We understand there is a significant problem. We understand that we have to have shared sacrifice. We also understand we need to work on this early and aggressively and together. Unfortunately, I have been through this before, as a number of you have, in 2003. That was frankly not the way it was handled at the state capitol, and I think you're setting a tremendous tone that will recognize that all of us are going to have to do some things together. What I wanted to do is very briefly talk about the issue of the local government aid, especially to cities. I obviously represent the largest city in the state, but what I think has really been quite clear to me over the past few years, since the 2003 cuts, is that the issues that you see in Minneapolis are magnified because it is larger, but they are sometimes even more acute in some of the smaller communities, including some that you've just heard from. So I want to just touch very briefly on that. As I mentioned, in 2003, there was a very significant cut to local government aid. The overall cuts, I believe, were about 13% in the state budget that year. I believe the LGA cuts were about 25%. They fell much more heavily on the local governments. Again, as well, I said that I believe all of us need to share in the sacrifice together. I do appreciate the comments I've heard, and I know Mr. Chair, Senator Pogemiller had made a comment earlier that everybody is going to have to give something, and I think that makes sense. So we stand for equity in that and certainly are willing to do our part of that. We have to understand, obviously, that when cuts are made, there are consequences. I think the role that we should have at local government is not to come here and say that the sky is falling. We should be transparent with that. We should be clear with that. We shouldn't overly frighten people, but we should simply talk about what will happen. So I, not only here, but much more important as we go out in the community, will commit to making sure that the statements that we make are quite transparent and are not about trying to create smoke screens. Everybody's going to have to give something. The issues that we see in the city of Minneapolis, if there is a local government aid cut, are similar to what you'll see in other cities around the country. Around the state. It will obviously involve public safety first. Public safety is our top priority. The cuts in 2003 were quite significant to public safety in the city of Minneapolis. They came at the same time that federal aid to cities for public safety was cut. So the state aids and the federal aids resulted in the elimination of funding for 100 police officers for the city of Minneapolis. It's no surprise that crime escalated after that period of time. Since that time, what we have done is we have replaced all of those 100 officers. We've done that through our local property tax. Crime is now down double digits in the city of Minneapolis. And there, again, is a cause and effect in all of that. The challenge, of course, is that what that has meant is a dramatic reprioritization within the city of Minneapolis. That's what we all need to do. But there are consequences that are less seen than public safety. The single most significant area that was cut in the city of Minneapolis, and I would hazard to say probably across the state of Minnesota, was in basic infrastructure that cities provide. We put more money on the street for police officers, but that meant that we couldn't fix the streets themselves. And so what that meant is that the challenges that you see in cities and like Minneapolis and across the state and things like potholes and street repair escalated. To repave a mile of street in the city of Minneapolis, it costs about $500,000. To reconstruct that, it costs about $9 million. I tell that story because by delaying some of those basic repairs in 2003 in the city of Minneapolis, we had to come back and do it in a far more expensive way with a complete reconstruction. Drive down Chicago Avenue in front of Abbott Northwestern Hospital. We did not repair that street in 2003, and the situation got worse. That was the right choice because we needed to put police officers on the street. But what it meant is that we had to come back with a far more expensive plan at $9 million a mile to redo that street. Amplify that throughout the state, and I say this because we are all going to have to continue to make those tough decisions. We are not going to make that decision in the city of Minneapolis. Right now, as I'm presenting the final stages of my budget that's working its way through the council this week, there is something called the Acceleration Program. It's a $27.5 million five-year program to repave the streets and the basic infrastructure in the city of Minneapolis. That is one part of the city budget I absolutely do not want to cut, because that $27.5 million over the next 5 years would escalate dramatically to well over $100 million if we do not attack that issue now. So I want you to have that on your radar as you look at this, because as you give suggestions and even mandates to the communities about that, I hope you also prioritize public safety as much as I do, but I hope you also recognize how important it is that we invest in our basic core infrastructure. So even within this context, we are going to be doing that work on basic infrastructure in the city of Minneapolis. I don't come here with any magic bullet. I don't think anybody has it. I think there's a lot of different things that we need to do. I obviously want you to, if there are cuts that need to be made, to do the best you can to remove any sort of unfunded state mandates to the communities. We have some lists that we think we could go through. We think there are some savings there, and we're certainly open to doing that. I also would be very, very interested in having us partner on the issue of regional collaborations. In 2003, there was a period of time in which, after these budget cuts hit dramatically and we all got our feet a little bit stabilized under us from the very quick nature of those cuts, we began to ask the questions that government should ask, is how do we cooperate across jurisdictional boundaries? And some good thinking took place. One idea after the other, after the other, after the other, started with a good idea, collaboration, but eventually stopped because it became clear that so many of those issues that you have as you're trying to make transitions in local government require a one-time cost that saves money in the long run. That's a good idea in the long run, but the challenge is as cities and counties were trying to cut their budgets, it was very difficult to fund the one-time transitions. We were able, for instance, to merge together two departments within the city of Minneapolis, but there were one-time costs on that. How do we really use our collaborative strategy here to be regional partners with each other, and how does the state partner in that to create incentives for governments regionalizing? I, for instance, believe that there's a potential for a metropolitan fire department within this community. We haven't fully vetted that idea, but we believe there's some potential there. We'd love to be in partnership with the state to looking at those issues and creating incentives for those ideas. We should throw a bunch of pasta up against the wall and see what sticks, but do that in a way that is collaborative. But I think it's a very important subtle point to be made that there are one-time costs to have those savings, and it's going to be very difficult to do that as we're comparing budgets. I think there's a role the state can play. I think there is one issue specifically within the city of Minneapolis I wanted to finish with that we would look to you for help. For the past 4 years, the city of Minneapolis has been seeking legislative approval to make changes in our closed pension funds, which are governed by the state of Minnesota. We unfortunately have not been successful in getting those through the legislature during this period of time. Those funds, which are closed at this point, have some very significant consequences that could be resolved. For instance, in one of those funds, the overtime for just three police officers during the bridge collapse ultimately cost the taxpayers of Minneapolis $1 million. So my very clear point, I recognize this is a tax committee and you're not in charge of pensions, but I ask you as you think about the partnerships to help us carry this message, had we been able to reform those pensions as we wanted to, we would have been able to be in a much better position than we are today. So we will continue to carry that message and believe that's one thing that we would like like to ask and to put much more on the front burner. That does obviously involve just the city of Minneapolis, but fully understanding Duluth's situation and some of the others, I believe that this should be a period of time in which we are moving forward on some of these ideas we've brought forward that could work. I want to conclude by saying that no community you're looking at is in good shape to do this. I think we're all struggling with those issues. We just, for instance, on some of our open pension funds, just received news that the stock market has had a significant impact on that. That caused us to do something I very, very much did not want to do, which is to have the budget that I proposed, which was a 6.8% increase, raised to 8% in this coming year. It's about the last thing I wanted to do, but it had to be done to address the very serious issues that we have that are affected by the stock market. But we are, however, in dramatically better shape because during that period of time when we were absorbing these cuts, we also have paid down more than $87 million in debt, freeing up far more capacity within our community. That doesn't make us ready to do these tough cuts, but I think we all need to be partners. So I want to finish by saying thank you for the tone you've set. Thank you for the comments you've made. We stand as partners, not only with you, but with our other communities, and believe that Minnesotans need to come together at a very difficult time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to extend the conversation that Mayor Rybick's opened here. We were reactionary in 2003. We had a lot of unintended consequences when we did that across the board cut. Have we considered compiling which cities have reserves? Have we started any kind of conversation regarding that?
I don't believe so. You know, cities have, to some degree, depending on their size, some have enterprise funds. There's a number of different some have local option sales taxes. There are a number of different revenue streams that cities have available to them in addition to LGA. So I think it's probably pretty hard to start making comparisons between cities because they are so different.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if I could address that question as well, and I certainly appreciate the question, but I do want us to make sure we're not penalizing cities for good management. One of the things that we have done, and I believe we should all be asking exactly all those questions, and I and my staff stand absolutely open to answer any of those questions. But one of the things that I'm most proud of that we have done in the city of Minneapolis is paid off the credit card. Our internal services fund had a debt of $38 million. That's paid off. That's our $87 million more in debt. We're going to keep paying off debt. So in this short period of time, there is a tendency to say, hey, who's got it and who doesn't? And frankly, I don't know how we'd come out on that whole comparison up or down. But please also recognize that as difficult as this period is and knowing we have to cut dollars now, we're going to be in this for a while. We should reward those who have good long-term planning, and even more than rewarding, we should set up strategies that enhance that long-term plan.
Well, Senator Johnson, to your comment, I'm just reminded of one advantage of a rural district is, I think in my case, I get about 13 or 14 small-town newspapers, and we got a call from somebody in the city of Babbitt that their property taxes had spiked up significantly this year. Well, I did know from having looked at the Babbitt paper that the city council made a decision to use some reserves and a one-time levy in order to build a new public works garage. And rather than go out and bond for 20 years, they had been saving up some money in their reserves and then decided to levy and actually pay cash for the new garage. So I think reserves sometimes are very misleading depending on how cities plan capital purchases.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Johnson.
And my comment was more directed towards our reaction to the cities that were in deep trouble afterwards and how we did have to do some individual kind of help. And what I was getting to is, can we get information now from the city of Williams and some of the other cities that we don't want to have unintended consequences happen to?
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mayor Rybick, and to all of you mayors. I'm struck by the fact that we're talking about fixing a biennial problem at the state level retroactively against an annual budget that's just about done. And I think at this time it would send shockwaves into your budgets. I don't think that that's a responsible thing to do, frankly. We have our own problems. I think you have your own problems. And Mayor Rybick, I'm hoping that you can comment just a little bit about what you expect to happen with your property tax revenues, because I think that's a problem for all the cities and counties, school districts. Property tax revenues are declining. And in particular, I know that the foreclosures have hit Minneapolis so very hard. Can you talk a little bit about what's happened with your property tax revenues in 08, what's going to happen in 09 and 010? And, of course, nobody has a crystal ball, but if you could just tell us what the experience looks like for you.
Sure, and thank you very much, Senator Ertman and Mr. Chair. The let me first off step back by saying that our budget right now is going for approval in a couple days. Okay, and so we're working that through the budget. I deliver my budget in August so that our departments and our council members and the public have a great deal of time to look at that, pull it apart, hopefully keep it together, but then work it through the council now. So we're 2 days, 2 or 3 days before we actually get this done. So it obviously would send a tremendous shockwave through it. It's also important to note, though, that I have never delivered a one-year budget. I have delivered eight, because I've had to do a couple in off years, eight budgets, but they've all been balanced not over 1 year, over 5 years. We do five-year planning in every one of our departments. Does that. So my budget is balanced. If I, for instance, propose adding a police officer, I can't just show how it does it in 1 year. I show how it's done over 5 years. So the first thing is we've balanced that against a five-year plan that is anticipating a relatively constant level of local government aid. So the local government aid cut would obviously, the proposed, if an unallotment, for instance, took place, that would obviously have an impact on this budget, but it would destabilize five-year planning. The reason I say that is to not only talk about what it does for our planning, but also say, wouldn't it be wonderful if the cities and the states had five-year budgets that we could plan up against? One of the biggest problems that happens when you're dealing with funding at a local level is so much of it deals with personnel. If state aid is a roller coaster, ask yourself then how you hire a police officer. Hire that officer, fire that officer, hire. You can't do that, obviously. So one of the challenges that takes place, and this was one, and I can get into these details later, there, but it, a nuance of the property tax cap that the state put on is it really, frankly, had very little to do with capping anyone's property taxes, but it did create that roller coaster effect. So you had one-time surplus in a budget and then a deficit. So what that really did, and I speak not only for Minneapolis, where I've got a big staff dealing with all this. Think about communities where mayors are working other jobs, where there are other folks doing this and trying to really dissect all of this. You can make a mistake by having something that looks like a good deal this year and not later, and unnecessarily and unpredictably creating a hole in your budget. I'm hopefully not doing that because we're balancing over 5 years, but one of the things is the actual numbers, Mr. Chair and Senator Ertman, the actual numbers that we're proposing, but frankly, I'm even more concerned about the roller coaster effect. It's very difficult to do that much with one-time dollars within a community. You can fix roads. That's a good thing, but you can't hire personnel. What's also important to do is that as you looked at the caps, you also put in several things that were issues that you cared about, and I think that's terrific. But what you need to do, for instance, public safety was one of those. Recognize that one of the things that happened with those cuts is that many communities like mine prioritized public safety, which meant police officers. But what we did inadvertently is we cut back on all the other services. So now in this budget, for instance, I went back in and added two more people in the city attorney's office because with more officers on the street, we're making more arrests. We've got to get them through the court system. And so we don't want something that says hire police officers, which I absolutely want to do, but we sure as heck better have some people who help those police officers get their case to court. I may be going further afield from your point. I probably am, but Mr. Chair, but I obviously have some thoughts in the area.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate Sarah your Urban. Comments, however, Mr. Mayor, but could you talk a little bit about the property tax revenues and
yes.
how
sorry.
You see that playing out in the next couple years?
I'm sorry for that. I didn't do that. When we began addressing our budget issues in 2002, we laid out a five-year property tax strategy. It was part of an ongoing strategy that would pay off the city's debt and address basic core services. That proposed a five-year rate of 8%. It was far more than I would want to do, but it created that predictable level. And so we stayed at 8% through this budget, where we worked incredibly hard, paying down debt, everything else, to come in at 6.8%. Now, as I mentioned, because of the pension issues, Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, we wound up having to raise that just last week to 8%. My budget now is balanced over these 5 years, anticipating that 8% as well.
Senator Ortman, let me try to ask the question.
Thank you.
I'm sorry if I'm not doing a good job.
I think what Senator Ortman is trying to get at, but if she isn't, I have this question. Is somebody from Department of Revenue in the room? Somebody from the governor's office, somebody's watching. I think it would be helpful if Revenue could put together for us some numbers on what a potential, I would think there's been a spike in delinquent property tax payments that cities now and counties haven't been receiving because people have made a decision as they've balanced their family finances at the dining room table that they're going to need to forego their property taxes, be willing to just pay the penalty in some time in the future when times are better for their family or for their business to make the payment. So my question, I guess, is the Department of Revenue. Could somebody in Revenue get us some numbers about what the spike was, assuming there was one, in October delinquencies? Because I suspect there's one out there, and that certainly is putting some additional stress on city and county and township budgets, I would think. I think that's what Senator Ortman was trying to get at. So I know I've asked Department of Revenue, and the sooner we can get that, I think, the better. But I think you're faced with a bit of a double whammy there, potentially, of losing what you thought were property tax dollars going to come in, and now additionally being put in a situation of potentially losing some state payments also.
Yeah, my apologies, Mr. Chair. It usually only takes me about 15 minutes to understand a question, so thank you. I'm sorry about that.
Third try, all that work.
We'll work on it this time. What I understand you asking is the fact that as the economy turns south, what impact does that have on property taxes, especially with the foreclosure issue?
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry about that. Actually, so far, the issue is that there is not a dramatic or radical change yet in the city for a couple of reasons. Number one, the foreclosure issue has definitely had an impact, especially serious. The foreclosure issue has actually begun to level off in the city of Minneapolis, and for the past 3 months has actually declined. Property values are down in certain areas, but primarily, and this deals with some of the nuances of the way property taxes is collected, primarily what that does is deal with a shift from homeowners to commercial. In 2001, after the 2001 economic slowdown, and because of state tax changes, the biggest impact was not in raw dollars, but the shift. That about 60% of the city's property taxes were collected from commercial property, all those big downtown office buildings, but that all shifted down to 40%. Changes in the state and also the economy. Office buildings were worth less, so residential property carried more. That's now leveling a little bit back, but the commercial base in the city of Minneapolis so far, so good. Our permits, in fact, for 2008 have been above 2007 levels. Our downtown office vacancy rate is at 12%, which is relatively low. That matters because it means the office building is worth more. So unlike a lot of other cities, Minneapolis has a very large commercial base, so that residential hit hasn't been as dramatic. I'll get you much more detailed answers on that because this is in flux quite a bit. But so far, that hasn't been the biggest impact. We anticipate that in the next couple of years.
Thank you.
I've been told that Department of Revenue does not currently have the numbers of what property tax delinquencies are. So I believe we'll probably have to reach out to county auditors and try to get our arms around that. So.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
One of the concerns I'm trying to get at is I see these cities where we're trying to or proposing to cut their aids while their property tax revenues are falling, so they have less ability to pass along those costs, and we've also put in place levy limits. And so it seems to me we're tightening the noose a little on these cities and making it hard for them to function. I think we have to seriously consider that before we cut a 2008 aid payment and consider it even further with more information about delinquencies and dropping property tax values before we do anything in 2009. I couldn't agree more with the mayor about the volatility of the LGA and the impacts that's having on cities. It goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down, and every year the cities have to respond, and it's getting harder and harder to respond with some kind of stable, sustainable budget. And so I don't think that we can pass along the state's problem to the cities without putting them into drastic circumstances. So I'm concerned about that, and I hope we will get more information about property taxes and those revenues.
Mr. Chair, if I could provide just one more quick piece of information on that. This obviously has an impact in Minneapolis, but I think Senator Ertman's question also really could be addressed by having some specific look at communities where foreclosure is a significant challenge. For instance, the city of Montgomery, I was in a kolachki eating contest with the mayor down there. He beat me, by the way. They have a very large foreclosure issue, as does New Prague, as does St. Michael. When you look at communities like that, especially those like Montgomery that would be not as rich in commercial property taxes, that could have a significant impact on that. So that's one way.
Thank you. Who's next?
Mr. Chair, Senators, thank you for hearing me. I'm Scott Schulte, the Mayor Pro Tem of Coon Rapids. I won't be as eloquent as Mayor Rybeck, only because I can't be.
You won't be as long either.
I won't be as long. I have no intentions of regurgitating all the numbers and information you already know and have heard. But I want to give you just a snippet of Coon Rapids and what we're dealing with. We're expecting $640,000 from the state in a couple weeks. We spent it last year. We're apparently not going to receive all of that, and we're understanding of that. We just would like the majority of it. 70% of our budget goes to people. I pay salaries and pensions and benefits and all the rest of it. And to cut this amount of money from a budget that's already been spent, we will be laying off some people. And laying off people is adding to the job problem in the state, and it's exponential. It'll not only cut into City Works projects, but private projects that we would be contracting throughout the city. In 2003, again, I'm not going to beat up all the numbers, but in 2003, we had $3.5 million worth of LGA pulled from our budgets. We survived that. We cut our staffing levels to early 90s levels. We're still there. We've not added anybody. We're at early 90s levels of staff in Coon Rapids, which we consider to be pretty much bare-bones staffing. Public safety and maintenance of our roads are probably our biggest expenditures at this point, and to cut back on those, we're already cutting back on our infrastructure improvements with resurfacing roadways and replacing roadways, and we're trying to catch up, but the reduction of this money would certainly cut into that and cut into our infrastructure. Being a 50-year-old city, we'll turn 50 next year, we have a lot of aging infrastructure and a lot of redevelopment needs. We're happy to address those, and frankly, we would be understanding if LGA in the future and market value homestead credit were cut, as long as we had enough notice where we could adjust for it. But expecting payments in 2 or 3 weeks and not getting them would cripple us as a city in our budget. Thank you for listening to us. And again, I have a lot of the same concerns as Mayor Rybeck and some of the smaller cities in the state. We're up against that battle, and I know you understand it as well as anybody. You're sitting at a table now where you have to make that critical, tough decision on where you cut and where you make choices. And do know that, and I know you know that, but all these cities, all these elected representatives are all doing the same thing on a local level. Thank you.
Senator Pogman.
Chairman, you used a $625,000 number. That must be a combination of LGA and market value credit.
That is our market value credit only, $640,000. We receive minimal LGA. That's our December.
The December payment is a combination of LGA and market value credit?
No, we don't receive LGA. We receive the minimum, I believe it's $150,000, a mandatory minimum. But we, other than that, we receive no LGA.
Well, I've got a December computer run I've got here. This is a technical question, but
yeah, I have our
we've got you down for $225 LGA payment. And
send it.
In December 10th.
No, we, according to my numbers, our 2008 market value home credit was 1.151700 for the whole year, and the payment outstanding for December is $640,000.
I think they get some LGA too, but we'll look into it.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Coon Rapids is one of the cities I was talking about earlier that got really hit hard in 2003, and I think we did give you a little bit of help after the fact because it was a 3.5 cut. They have learned from really a tough experience how to manage their budget, and I'm not suggesting any city isn't managing their budget well, but they took it so hard in 2003 that their LGA is much, much smaller.
Mr. Chair, if I may add one more thing. We don't have a reserve account. We have a cash flow account. We don't use it as reserves. We use it as cash flow. And to dip into that to cover some of these losses would truly affect our Moody's credit rating, which in a redeveloping city, borrowing money to redevelop is critical. And we need it at a reasonable interest rate, and we can't afford to pull out of that cash flow fund for reserves because it would affect that credit rating through Moody's.
Mayor Brady.
Chairman Bach and members of the Tax Committee, thank you very much for the opportunity that you're providing to for us to comment on the whatever is going to happen here with the various budget situations. Given the time, and I don't want to just restate everything, I'm going to try and cut through what I had as comments here. But
Mayor Brady, first tell us where you're from.
Oh, excuse me, Rochester, Minnesota.
Thank you.
Come on down anytime.
I'm going to be down next Thursday morning, I think. I think I'm going to be on the radio down there.
Oh, very good.
Something Senator Lynch set up. So
very good. As most cities, but in our case, the City of Rochester budget was prepared based on the expected receipt of our December payment LGA of $3.8 million. If some or certainly if all of that were not received, as it's been mentioned many times already, bond ratings would be affected, cash flow is affected, and it's a serious situation. In our case, the certified amount for 2008 was $7.6 million, which is still $3.5 million below what 2003 certified amount was. And at that time, we imposed a hiring freeze and did not fill vacancies like many have done through attrition at that time. They occurred across all city departments, including public safety. And at this point, we haven't fully recovered from that. For the 2009 budget, which we're going through right now as well, there's no new employees. We've been fortunate enough to add 1,500 new citizens to our city, and we hope to add 4 to 8 police officers to handle a particular crime issue. None of those have been approved, and we are instituting a process to again leave vacancies that occur in 2009 unfilled. It's been mentioned by virtually all of you about the reductions that were had in 2003, that there was a disparity in how it was done when you go across the board, ranging from $10 per capita to $70 per capita. And it was not fair at that time, and we certainly hope that we can work on that to be fairer in this situation. If there's a total unallotment, it's going to have serious implications and would create, and if it was also then imposed in 2009, it would create a very serious and dire financial situation. So we pledge to work together to try and find the fairest way to deal with that. And now I've been asked to sort of be the cleanup for the team, and I'm certainly not Justin Morneau, but we will go at it. To conclude our testimony today, I'd like to draw attention to an old document with a new relevance, the 2005 report of the Financing Local Government Task Force. The task force proposed 5 principles that drive the renewal of our intergovernmental system: accountability, certainty, adequacy, flexibility, and equity. And the last principle of equity is at the heart of the Minnesota Miracle reforms of the early 1970s, the catalyst for local government aid. Equity, as applied here, is the belief that all citizens should receive sufficient levels of city services at similar levels of taxation, regardless of where they live. With this principle at its core, LGA allows low property wealth and high need cities to provide services at a reasonable tax rate. But perhaps the most relevant principle we want to leave you contemplating today is that of certainty. Why does certainty matter in our state-local partnership? Because without it, good government, government that is prudent, planful, efficient, and effective, is an impossible dream. There's no more troubling example of uncertainty in our current system than mid-year cuts to LGA or MVCHC. We have come before you today as community leaders representing not just police officers, firefighters, public works crews who provide essential services, but the 5 million Minnesotans, including yourselves, including our visitors, in our case our patients, who rely on these services for their safety, security, and well-being. We urge you to think long and hard before undercutting this most basic social contract and societal expectation. We sincerely appreciate the respect you have shown for our cities by asking for our input in this hearing. Thank you very much.
Very Brady, well said.
Thank you, Senator Pokemon. It's on the Coon Rapids situation. Apparently, Coon Rapids gets 450 in LGA and 1.2 in market value credit. So the December, there is a 225 payment in LGA and a 609 payment in market value. And so it's a combination there that we have to think about. And I think the way this was done in 2003, and some of us didn't vote for that. A lot of us didn't vote for that.
I don't think anyone was at this. I don't think anyone at this table did. Senator Ortman and Johnson might have.
I think the way that was designed is LGA was taken first, and then if you ran at LGA, you took some market value credit. So I think that's one of the things the committee has to think about. As we distribute these sacrifices across cities, there's got to be some combination there.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Schulte.
Senator Pogermiller, that $450,000 you refer to is you paying us back. You borrowed money from us when we advanced a roadway through Coon Rapids. Mm. And you are paying us back through LGA as a vehicle, but it's actually money you owe us, not LGA. Respectfully submitted. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you again.
The deficit grows.
We understand how that works.
We did a speed-up payment in the tax bill or something? I've lost track of that one.
Mr. Chair, pardon me, Ms. Pogermiller?
We did a speed-up payment for you or something?
We were building Main Street through the Riverdale area of Coon Rapids.
Oh, Riverdale. I remember that. Okay. I remember that now.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mayors. Keith Carlson here. Well, Mr. Carlson's coming up, members. Let me just say to the league, and I think it's probably best expressed to the league, because you're the big umbrella group under which all the other smaller groups of small cities and rural cities and suburban cities all fall under. Let me express to you what I expressed to the state chamber last week. I met with the state chamber's fiscal committee last Thursday afternoon after the forecast, a group of about 45 chamber members that are interested in state tax policy. And I asked the Chamber and the Minnesota Business Partnership if they could put together kind of a subgroup that members of the Tax Committee, so we can more closely manage and together work on this. If you could think about putting some kind of a good cross-section of Minnesota cities together that members of the Tax Committee could meet with periodically, I think that would be the most efficient way to address this. The Chamber and the Partnership agreed to do that from the business community. If you would be willing to do that from the cities, I think that would probably be the best use of everybody's time. So if you could kind of put your heads together and think about that, I think that would be very helpful. I'm going to suggest to Senator Stump, when I get the opportunity to see him, that we put a similar group like that together of school districts. You know, members, we're not going to solve this problem in the Capitol. This is a big problem. There's going to be a lot of shared pain around the state. And my hope is that we can engage everybody. And my hope is that in May we don't do anything that is negative to our business community that causes even a more difficult recovery coming out of this recession. and that our partnership with our local units of government remain strong. We very much depend on you to deliver services that people in our communities expect, and it's going to be a lot of hard work. It's going to be a lot of hard work outside this building, I think, in order for us to make sure that we deliver in May, maybe not what people want, but hopefully people will get what they absolutely need. And the sooner that we start figuring out that, the better. So, Mr. Carlson and Madam Mayor, if you could think about a group that some members of the Tax Committee could periodically get together with, I think that would be the most efficient use of everybody's time.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogona.
I think we should take up, one of the mayors or several of them mentioned mandates. I think we should encourage a list of mandates that local communities might want some relief from.
Senator Pogona, I have had a discussion with the counties about the whole maintenance of effort issue, and there is going to be a bill on that maintenance of effort provision that was in last year's tax bill. I have committed to the counties that they would have as much time as they needed to explain to the tax committee where about the maintenance of effort provisions and where they don't have any flexibility in their budget. I think that's a good suggestion that we also maybe schedule some time for the cities. There will be a bill that centers around the counties, but I think a committee hearing to talk about mandates on cities also would be helpful, and if that group of cities could start talking about that and putting that list together, I think that we probably would have a hearing around that around the same time we do something with the county maintenance of effort issue. Members, I
Mr.
met...
Mr. Chairman, you know about levy limits. You never liked those. You fought against them. The city should know this. Senator Bach fought hard and valiantly against levy limits last year.
I believe it was the last issue resolved in the session. And I think most cities, at least were able to get through this year under those levy limits. My concern and my discussions with the governor is, what about the second year and the third year? We spent a lot of time talking about that because we've never done 3 years before. And so I think we're going to have to continue to have that discussion also as we move forward into this session on what are the impacts of last year's tax bill. And if we're going to undo part of that, whether it's LGA or market value credit, then maybe we need to look at other provisions in the tax bill, because it really was a package that was negotiated with the governor, and I think there's, as it starts to unravel, a number of other issues I think probably need to be open for discussion. Sunday night, members, I met with a group of county administrators. There were about 30 of them. I had dinner with them in Duluth. The Association of Minnesota Counties, AMC, is holding their annual conference up in Duluth Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of this week. They do, of course, know this hearing's going on, but it is their big annual conference. I did express to the administrators and the AMC leadership that we would provide them some opportunity later so that we didn't disrupt their conference. You know, they've got valuable seminars that they conduct there. So had we have known that their seminar was going Monday through Wednesday, we probably would have tried to schedule this tomorrow. But at the time we posted the notice, we didn't know that. So the fact that Mr. Carlson is the only one here from the counties does not imply in any way that counties aren't very, very concerned about the relationship between the state and them and potential impacts of things we do, how they're impacted. But we'll give them an opportunity sometime a little later to come in and talk more specifically. But for now, we have Mr. Carlson with us, and welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Senator Bach, and thank you for covering the reason why you do not have dozens of county officials here. As he indicated, this is the week of their annual meeting that is ending at noon today and should not be taken as their absence shouldn't be taken as an indication of lack of concern. There is substantial concern, but I think there's also a practical acknowledgement that counties will have to be a piece of the solution to the state's budget difficulties. Much of what you've heard from the cities could also be echoed by the counties. Our fiscal year ends at exactly the same time, December 31st. Our ability to suffer cuts is no more or less than the cities, particularly for the smaller counties. I'll
have passed out a chart that shows you the amount of the second half payments to each one of the counties for county program aid, our local government aid, and the market value based credits, and those total to $166 million. You should know there are a number of related special county entities such as HRAs, community development agencies, and regional rail authorities that have further payments coming to them that would also potentially be affected by cuts. The one thing I particularly want to emphasize is that your fiscal staff received an inventory of all the remaining payments to be made to third parties by the state. And looking across all programmatic areas, health and human services, corrections, environment, the county's exposure to cuts is $332 million, which is greater than the $315 million that remains to be paid to the cities and townships combined. So our risk is somewhat greater than what the cities and the townships are exposed to. I think my third slide, no time to cut programs and expenditures, is obvious. You simply don't have time to make layoffs, to put in place temporary work hour reduction, if that's even possible under current contracts. But the issue is further compounded, particularly for counties, because of the maintenance of effort and matching fund issues that Representative Bach or Senator Bach mentioned. $312 million is required to be spent by counties each year without any possibility of reduction under current state law. I think it's maybe gone unsaid, but I think it has to be said explicitly, it's too late for us to adjust our pay 2009 levies. And that's true whether we're talking about townships, special districts, cities, or counties. We can't increase the levies above the preliminary level that we certified back in September for truth and taxation purposes. And for most counties, we've already approved our final levy after our December 4th truth and taxation levy, so it's difficult to go back. One thing I will point out, under the tax bill that was passed last spring, we probably do have special levy authority for the tax payable in 2010 for any cuts that are made via an allotment. So if aid cuts are part of the mix and they're made by the governor rather than by you, it appears that we have authority to levy that back in 2010. That, however, does not apply under current law to legislated cuts. I'll mention that delays, which is possibly something you could do rather than a cut, probably won't help. First, I think it's just delaying the inevitable. You may delay the December aid payment, but the reality is by the time you get to May, it may well become a cut at that point. Secondly, for purposes of our financial accounting, anything that we can't book within 60 days of the close of the fiscal year just simply doesn't count. We will have to acknowledge the shortfall on our financial statements regardless of any future promised payback. Really, the bottom line, the only option is to forego the lost revenues and suffer deterioration in our balance sheets. Generally, we can't borrow to make up for lost operating revenues. It's conceivable that in some instances you could borrow for cash flow purposes, but that doesn't really make up for it. Conceivably, you could borrow to make up for lost capital expenditure revenues, but the timing and the current fiscal climate makes that very unlikely. I think the final thing you should note is that reductions in market value credit reimbursements are really treated as a property tax delinquency by the bond rating agencies. They look at what we levied and then what we get back in actual collections, and that includes the market value-based credit. So if you cut that, that really is treated as a delinquency by the bond rating agencies. The bottom line is that really anything that you do with regards to 2008 will really practically affect our 2009. Depending on the severity, it might result in further layoffs. The fact of the matter is that with the levy limits that were placed on us for 2009, we've already had to lay off staff. This just means that probably we will end up laying more. Capital projects may be dropped or delayed. And then finally, the maintenance of effort issues become even more problematic. Right now, 17 of the counties are not meeting the $111 million mental health maintenance of effort, and that's likely to increase. Just to have a couple final suggestions, you're really looking at a three-year problem. Obviously, you're making the decision with regards to just the state fiscal year 09 at this time, but I'd encourage you to keep in mind a suggestion that, one, you should be staging the cuts in local areas. Our ability to deal with their consequences is much better if they're more weighted towards the back end of this 2009 to 2011 period than it is if it's concentrated in the front end. We've already budgeted for both 2008, 2009. We have little wherewithal to go back and adjust for those, whereas in 2010 or 2011, we do have somewhat more latitude. I will strongly encourage you to, again, take into account the fact that the counties have substantial exposure in the other portions of the budget. Over roughly $150 million of our potential cuts could come in health and human services, corrections, so on. And I ask you to please consider that in setting the level of cuts for counties. Then finally, you have historically done the cuts on the basis of levy plus aid. Once you determine the targets for the individual levies of local government, I would encourage you to continue your past practices of making the cuts on levy plus aid. It frankly is the fairest way to do it, at least in the short term. With that, I'll conclude. I again thank you for hearing our concerns and welcome your suggestions of putting together groups to react as a sounding board for you, and also your desires to look more closely at the mandates issue.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Carlson. I'm following the reasoning of your suggestions here. But also looking at our biennium 08 and 09, we're going to have, by the Constitution, a balanced budget for 2009. If we have to make the cuts, say the ones on Senator Pogemiller's list here, say $25 million by the end of 09, is it your position that we would, the counties and logically also the cities, be better off if all those cuts were made in the last payment of 09 as opposed to spread over 08 and the two payments in 09?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, the only thing that is really under consideration for this committee is the December 26th aid payment. Once you get past that point, there's really nothing for this committee to talk about because the next aid payment falls within the next payment. That's on July, the middle of July. So that's the only thing really practically under consideration for this committee. If you fail to act by December 26, $308 million of the roughly $315 million that is owed to the townships and cities is already gone. You can't go back and recover that. It's different with the counties, again, because we have monies coming in other portions of the budget. We would still have $150 million out there. $185 million is gone. So that's the only cut we're talking about. We're only talking about our calendar year 2008.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Carlson, I understand what you're saying, but what I'm getting at is if we have to make a biennial adjustment to our local government aids and credits, ostensibly we could make up all of the balance in 2009 based on the aid payments that will go out in 2009. It understood that we may make a decision in 2008 to forego any cuts, which might mean that we could apply them all if we have to make cuts in 2009 in order to balance our budget. Is it better to put them all at the back end of 2009 is my question.
Mr. Carlson, I think the issue is the cuts we're talking about that I think you're referring to in 2009 are fiscal year 2010.
That's correct.
It's the next biennium for us. And any cuts that are made in the December 26th payment are actually fiscal year 2009. So I think we're getting a little mixed up with the fact that local units of government are on a calendar year and the state is on a fiscal year. So I think that's where the confusion is.
Mr. Chairman, that's good clarification. So the July payment, Mr. Carlson, that you're talking about would be part of that fiscal year 2010.
Correct.
So the only cut we can make for this biennium would have to be made in December.
Correct.
Appreciate that clarification. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Carlson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Any other questions or comments from committee members? Members, I don't know if we're going to have another committee hearing before December 26th. I guess we'll see how the discussions with the governor goes. Senator Pogueno, any thoughts on that?
Some people in this room may be participating. The speaker and I and the governor are meeting with representatives of the cities today at 2:30, I think. So that's another step in the process here.
Yes. Sure, go ahead.
My name is Mary O'Connor. I'm a council member in Brooklyn Center. Brooklyn Center has a creek going through it called Shingle Creek. At our last meeting, it was decided by the council that the creek was too straight and it needed to meander. So the council, other than I, myself, said, yeah, go ahead and work on meandering this creek. There's a portion that's buried under a parking lot at Brookdale Mall, and that they're talking about opening that up. Well, that's owned by Brookdale Mall, a private company. But Hennepin County and my city are talking about opening that up, and they're going to continue with that plan. I don't think that is a very important thing to do. And then tax increment financing. That has allowed us to purchase businesses and tear them down. So right now we have three big fields in Brooklyn Center with nothing on them. And that money for TIF is not only coming from Brooklyn Center taxpayers, but it's also coming from our school districts and Hennepin County. Their money is coming to our city so we can redevelop. Well, right now we have three big plots of empty land. We have a heritage center that is actually a meeting center. It's called Earl Brown Heritage Center. It's a meeting center, and that is not a public place. So that is something that is paid for by the Heritage Center, but it gives nothing to the citizens of Brooklyn Center. We have two liquor stores, which I don't think our city should be in the business of.
But we have to do a comprehensive plan. Could you tell me what the committee hearing is about, the state budget deficit that we're facing, and that's what mm-hmm. we're
yeah.
trying
well,
to
I would
take testimony
say,
on? So.
I would say we don't need our local government aid because we don't spend it wisely. So I think that local government aid is not needed by cities. I think they just go and build things that are unnecessary. It's not going toward basic services. They're building all these unnecessary things in the cities.
Okay, thank you very much. Committee members, we're adjourned.